This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. Cellular health is the foundation of wellness. True Niagen Pro helps cells stay resilient. True Niagen Pro is a unique form of vitamin B3 clinically proven to safely increase NAD, a vital resource used to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. But this critical cellular resource is not constant. It's been found to decline up to 50% as we age. When NAD levels are low, our cells have a harder time producing the energy they need to maintain our health as we age. Published research shows that increasing NAD boosts cellular energy production, supports healthy cellular metabolism, and promotes cellular repair. When surveyed, True Niagen users report improvements in energy levels and an enhanced sense of overall well-being. True Niagen Pro is backed by multiple published clinical studies and is only available through healthcare practitioners. You can get yours by going to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com for True Niagen Pro. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And the subject of great importance is, how do we treat our kids from a naturopathic and integrative standpoint? We're talking today to the editor of an encyclopedic text about how to take care of kids naturally. It's entitled Naturopathic and Integrative Pediatrics. It is very comprehensive. It is nearly 800 pages long. It is full of references and very detailed chapters on virtually all aspects of children's health, from the prenatal period through pre-adolescence. And with us is Leslie Solomonian, the editor. Leslie is an associate professor at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine in Toronto. That's where this interview comes to us from. And she's also the lead clinician at the Neighborhood Clinic. And she's involved in a lot of community engagement. She's worked at health clinics in Kenya and Peru. And she is really a mover and shaker in the world of naturopathic medicine. So without further ado, because it would take the entire broadcast to tout all your accomplishments, let's start talking about your text. First of all, what prompted you to write such an encyclopedic textbook? Is this is it unprecedented? Is there? I mean, it really seems to me, and there are lots of textbooks on adult medicine, but not textbooks on natural treatment of children.
Yeah, there really doesn't seem to be much like it out there. I just want to clarify that I'm the author, not just the editor. So I did have.
Oh my goodness, that's even more impressive because usually what happens is somebody puts their name on it and then farms out chapters to other people. Yeah. You know, but
that's so not to pump my tires, but just to, you know, it was a big labor of love. There have been other attempts. There was one other textbook previously on specifically naturopathic pediatrics. And it held the space for a while, and we decided at the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine that it was time for a new project. So it's something I'm very passionate about. I didn't go into naturopathic medicine to pursue pediatrics, but as I parented, I have two children of my own, and as I taught pediatrics, which I kind of fell into by default, it struck me how significant working with kids is. If we can help children establish healthy habits early on in life, if we can educate caregivers to provide the essential pillars of health to children, we'll go such a long way in terms of preventing the non-communicable diseases that we're plagued by in our society. So to me, it's something I'm incredibly passionate about, less so the how do we manage illnesses naturally, although of course that's an important part of my work. But I'm really passionate about social determinants of health, behavioral medicine. How do we, in many cases, go against the flow of the mainstream in terms of providing our children with the natural inputs that they need to grow strong and healthy?
Indeed. So is it a hard role to be a naturopathic pediatrician? Because it's hard enough for me, to do adult medicine. I do integrative medicine here in New York City. You know, you explain to an adult, the adult, you know, there's either buy-in or not. But with a child, you have to treat the child. The child can't really effectively communicate, but you also have a lot of parental apprehension because there's a big fear factor when people depart from conventional care for their kids. Going to see a naturopath is sometimes, oh my goodness, you know, are you guilty of some form of child abuse by so doing? I mean, literally, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but I think there's an undercurrent of that.
Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. I think compliance is a challenge, whether you're using natural approaches or not. You know, treating children is its own challenge, independent of naturopathic or integrative medicine. But you're also right. That's one of the biggest challenges around fear and the emotional intensity of parenting. And every parent is always doing the very best they can for their children, whether it's well-guided or not. So for me, my biggest focus is education. And that really ties into why I wrote the book. I spend so much time telling my students and telling my patients certain things. And I felt like, you know, if I could just get this all down in one place, I could probably save myself an awful lot of time. So whenever I do have a parent coming in, the classic example is fever management. Yep. You know, so typical in our society, mm-hmm. for parents to be told by their healthcare providers or just culturally to suppress that fever, to alternate acetaminophen and ibuprofen to get that temperature down. And so that's a really good example of an opportunity for me to provide education about what that fever is doing, what that fever represents for that child. I just had a family in today where that was exactly the thing. She's 5 years old. She's having fevers maybe once a month, no other significant symptoms. The parent's concerned that, you know, there's something wrong. So we just walked through, you know, it's not unusual for a child to get a viral infection once a month. And the fever is a sign that she's coping with it well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get a lot
it's
of
like
education.
Boot camp for their immune systems. They're
exactly.
Sort of getting programmed by the pathogens that are out there. We're not born with a full complement of defenses against everything that's out there. Our immune systems need to learn.
You got it. And that was precisely what I was explaining. And so when I took a look in her throat and she had slightly enlarged lymph nodes, but they didn't seem to be, you know, no exudates, no pus, nothing like that. So I took that as an opportunity to explain, you know, this isn't a bad thing. Her tonsils are learning. They're trying to cope. They're coping well. She's got lots of energy. You know, there's no need to bring down the fever. There's no need to panic. Here are some other strategies that might help you actually support her fever, which is a really foreign concept to a lot of families. But when I explain what the fever is doing, what the elevated body temperature is doing, and what the consequences of suppressing that are, it seems so logical.
So what are the downsides of taking Tylenol? I mean, it's documented in adults that take too much Tylenol, especially if they're taking remedies that contain alcohol and they're not eating. Mm-hmm. That it can actually cause severe liver damage. But you know, what about kids, you know, so-called children's Tylenol?
Sure. So there's a lot of pieces to that. The first is that there's, particularly with acetaminophen, there's a lot of emerging evidence around more the prenatal use of acetaminophen and the impact that that can have on neurologic development in children. And so I'm seeing that as a reason to engage the precautionary principle. So if we know
it
that
it depletes
Tylenol,
glutathione, that's not great.
Exactly. Exactly. And so when we think about even something like a concussion, you know, one of the recommendations for head pain around concussion is Tylenol, but concussions and concussive symptoms are in many ways mediated by oxidation damage. And so why would we be wanting to give something that depletes that? So, you know, that's one concern I have. And we don't have a rigorous volume of evidence to say that kids shouldn't be using it. But again, if there are other things that we can use instead, I'd rather do that. But for me, the bigger question is why are we using it? And I always ask parents that when they say, you know, my child gets a fever every so often, I ask, what do you do to manage it? They say, well, you know, I give Tylenol and ibuprofen. And I ask them why, and it always stops them in their tracks. And they look at me like I'm nuts and say, well, because they have a fever.
Mm-hmm.
And I say,
we've got to bring it down. We've got to normalize it. Yeah,
exactly. And so I'm trying to sort of rhetorically ask those questions until they realize like, oh, actually, there's no really sound logic to this. So I talk about when to worry. You know, I talk about if the temperature is really going up fairly high, which, you know, I have a higher tolerance than most. Mm-hmm. But if the temperature is above 39 and the child's not feeling well, then I'm less concerned about the temperature because their body is actually doing what it's supposed to do.
We'll translate that to American. That would be, what, about 102?
Oh, I apologize. Yes, exactly. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned about why the temperature is so high. I'm more concerned about what is the causative agent here. I'm more concerned about, does this child need supportive care in terms of respiratory function, in terms of, you know, possible sepsis? Mm-hmm. I'm not concerned about the number. The number to me is an indicator of what is going on underneath. So I'm less concerned about bringing the temperature down and more concerned about figuring out why the temperature is what it is. So when I explain that to families and they can accept that that seems logical, then I give them support and education about when to worry, when to call me, when to go to the ER, and some supportive therapies they can do at home when they realize it's not something to panic about.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message with you. Here goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. Cellular health is the foundation of wellness. True Niagen Pro helps cells stay resilient. True Niagen Pro is a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, a vital resource used to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. But this critical cellular resource is not constant. It's been found to decline up to 50% as we age. When NAD levels are low, our cells have a harder time producing the energy they need to maintain our health as we age. Published research shows that increasing NAD boosts cellular energy production, supports healthy cellular metabolism, and promotes cellular repair. When surveyed, True Niagen users report improvements in energy levels and an enhanced sense of overall well-being. True Niagen Pro is backed by multiple published clinical studies and is only available through healthcare practitioners. You can get yours by going to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com for True Niagen Pro. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to our guest, Dr. Leslie Solomonian. So where does the ND fit into the care plan of a child? Because, you know, clearly there are reasons for heroic interventions with medication and antibiotics, and it depends on where the ND is situated. NDs in certain states in the U.S. Have the ability to prescribe medications, maybe in some cases limited. And in some cases, they can't prescribe medications. So is it reasonable to have sort of a portfolio of healthcare practitioners for your child, a naturopathic physician for education purposes and for dealing with minor things and prevention, and then an ace in the hole kind of eagle-eyed pediatrician to back things up?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great strategy. And you're right. Certain jurisdictions, so Oregon, Arizona, Washington State, those are jurisdictions where there's a really broad scope of practice for naturopathic doctors. And as you point out, they can prescribe the antibiotics. They're on, you know, health insurance plans. So they really operate like a primary care provider, and they function that way. In Ontario, so I believe New York State doesn't actually license naturopathic doctors at all. So
not
folks there are kind of going rogue.
We're working
in
on
Ontario, we are licensed. We're considered doctors. We have that regulation, but we don't have access to the pharmaceutical prescribing that they do in other places. So what I recommend to my patients, I do have some families that come to me for primary care, and I'm certainly trained to do that. I can order labs in Ontario, but it's not paid for by our universal healthcare. So, you know, I explain all of that. Some come to me as adjunctive, and so they choose to see me for all the things you described, for prevention, for complementary support around the things that their pediatrician is offering. But even if they are coming to me for primary, I always recommend that they do have a relationship with a medical doctor, for just as you described, for that heroic medicine should it be needed. So in Ontario, I am trained to assess a child who's got an apparent infection. I can look to see whether there's a, you know, swollen red eardrum. And if I think, based on the standards of care, that antibiotics are indicated, I'm going to then refer them to a medical doctor.
You sort of know when to hold and when to fold.
Exactly, precisely. And so for me, that's all about the right medicine for the right patient at the right time. In naturopathic medicine, we have an algorithm that we call the therapeutic order, which basically talks about the aggressiveness, let's say, or the invasiveness of particular interventions. And so we start with optimizing conditions for health. We talk about good diet and sleep and all of those sorts of things. And then it moves all the way down into surgery and pharmaceuticals. And so there's a place for that. There's a time for that. And my job as a naturopathic doctor is to gauge when something is within my training and my scope of practice in my jurisdiction and when it's not, and when a pharmaceutical might be appropriate if I'm person who can prescribe it or not, I'm trained to recognize when it's needed. So I really think that all people, there's a benefit of having a circle of care. And in my perfect world, if you were to ask me about my perfect world, I think naturopathic doctors are the perfect primary care providers for adults and kids, because we have the training to do prevention. We have the training to diagnose, to assess, to refer. We have all of that capacity, but our approach to health is one that's very much about health promotion. We can treat very effectively conditions, particularly in children who are so incredibly vital and responsive to the things that we do, very successfully. And I talk about getting sick well. This idea that, particularly for a child, as you said earlier, you know, it's a boot camp for their immune systems. So if I can support a child in getting through an illness in a way that educates their immune system so they're more efficient and effective the next time they get sick, that's a huge success for me. So I like it when kids get sick, which sounds really sadistic, I realize. But it's an opportunity to help. Yeah, to develop resilience, you know, both emotional resilience. You know, we're all going to get sick. We have to learn to cope with that. But also in terms of immunological resilience. And so my recommendations aren't just about get over this infection and deal with the fever and make the child comfortable. It's about how can we get through this situation so that the child is actually healthier on the other side.
What are some of the supportive supplements or interventions for a kid, say, with an upper respiratory infection and a fever? That's not bacterial, doesn't require antibiotics. I mean, there's so many statistics around about how frequently kids with minor ear infections, minor sinus congestion, a viral cold, or even bronchitis, receive antibiotics, which are actually, according to very, very detailed research, don't make a difference ultimately.
They don't make a difference. They could potentially cause harm, both in terms of the child's own microbiota, but also in terms of antibiotic resistance, as you know. So yes, very interesting that you ask. I'm actually have a Delphi study in ethics review right now to examine that very question around antibiotic stewardship and how do experienced naturopathic physicians deal with the common viral upper respiratory tract infections in children. So this is really good timing. So some of the really common strategies I use, I love using hydrotherapy with children. So hydrotherapy is the application of hot and cold compresses to the body that actually manipulate circulation. So one of my favorites is Magic Socks. We ask parents, and as a parent myself, I have teenagers now. They're the ones who ask me to help them put on the Magic Socks when they're sick, because they know from experience how well it works. So by putting cold, wet cotton socks on the child's feet and then covering that up with a thermal sock, so wool or fleece of some sort, and then tucking them into bed, it helps to stimulate dilation of those peripheral blood vessels. So it drives circulation without losing heat. So if you go outside, of course, and it's cold, eventually your body will shut down.
This is a very traditional naturopathic technique. It's not taught at all in medical schools. It's something that was the mainstay of therapy probably in the 19th century.
Indeed, yeah, until heroic medicine came along. So that's always my first line of defense, because if what the body's trying to do when it's dealing with an infection is upregulate circulation, increase cardiac output, increase blood pressure, and so on, then why not support that? So by putting these Magic Socks on at night, it helps to drive circulation, circulates the white blood cells so they can identify and deal with the infectious agents. And then, of course, allowing elimination of that via the lymphatic system. So that's the first thing I do. There's a whole plethora of herbs that are really helpful. And one of my favorites is elderberry. It's an antiviral as well as an immunosupportive. And I like it because it tastes good. And so compliance is a challenge, particularly with botanical medicine. A lot of them are alcohol extractions, and so parents worry about that, and kids don't like them. So I like elderberry because it's typically prepared as a syrup, and it's very, very helpful. It's very tasty, and it supports the immune system in dealing with those viral infections. So those are two really good places to start, I would say, for a generic sort of antiviral strategy. But depending on where the focus of infection is, so for example, ear infections you mentioned, super common, assuming the tympanic membrane's intact, there's good evidence for using ear oil, which would contain things like
mullein, things like that.
Mullein, exactly, and garlic. And so parents can make that themselves if they're so inclined, but there's lots of companies that have them off the shelf. So I always advise families, you know, sort of to your question earlier, you know, what should the circle of care look like? Once I've established a relationship with a family and given them the preemptive education around what to do when your kid gets sick, I usually say, you know, if they seem to have signs of an ear infection, come to me first. because I can take a look, A, to make sure their eardrum isn't perforated. And if it's not, I can, you know, coach you through using this ear oil and mm-hmm. you know, the wets and all those things. And I can also tell you whether or not it's severe enough that an antibiotic might be warranted. Because what we know is, as you pointed out, there's so many occasions where antibiotics are unnecessarily prescribed. And we've seen from the studies that often this is because parents are pressuring the doctor for mm-hmm. prescription because they want to do something. So what's lovely about naturopathic medicine is in that window of watchful waiting before antibiotics are indicated and hopefully never getting to the point where they are needed, there's lots that we can do naturopathically to alleviate discomfort, to support the immune system, and to resolve the infection. So again, elderberry, wet socks, there's other herbs, you know, vitamin C. I try not to overdo it, frankly, because mm-hmm. kids tend to be pretty resilient for the general viral infection, and then depending on the focus. So if there's a cough and a sore throat, you know, honey goes a long way. I often advise parents, I mean, we know that honey is a good cough suppressant anyway, but I'll often advise parents to do a preparation with honey and onion and thyme. Mm-hmm. So thyme, the cooking herb thyme, is a good antitussive. And so it's really nice to include in a homemade cough syrup. So
because, as you well know, there are many of the recent studies that evaluate some of the over-the-counter cough remedies, right. many of which contain Tylenol or right. aspirin or other sedating antihistamines, really just knock kids out. But they actually don't make a difference in terms of the severity or duration of the cough. And the cough mechanism is not something you want to suppress. It actually helps clear right. mucus. Yeah.
You got it. Yeah. So that's actually something I talk a lot about. I mean, I mentioned fevers earlier. What is the role of the fever? But precisely, if your kid has diarrhea, there's a reason for that. Their body is trying mm-hmm. to eliminate something that's a toxin of some sort. The same with the cough. And so if we can support them in clearing that mucus, then that's a really good thing. So, you know, to your point, the over-the-counter medications, not only are they not effective, and in some cases they can be harmful. And so honey really goes, you know, head to head with those and performs really well, of course, children over the age of 12 months with the honey. But we can also add some other medicinal value to that by incorporating things like onion, which is a mucolytic, and also antimicrobial, the thyme, which is an antitussive. And so incorporating both of those into the honey.
But with a caveat about honey, I believe, for really young children, right? There's yeah. something about that botulism.
So under 12 months.
No honey for under 12 months.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because of an immature immune system and the possibility yes. that there's botulism potential botulism. From the honey. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, okay, great start. Can you stay with us? Because I have lots of additional questions, which we'll take up in part two. As our listeners know, we divide our podcast into two parts. So we're going to take up questions like, do kids need to take nutritional supplements on a regular mm-hmm. basis? And what herbs are safe and popular for kids? And we'll talk a little bit about the childhood obesity epidemic that we're facing. We're even seeing kids with fatty liver and type 2 diabetes, and we'll talk about screen time. We'll talk about also how to keep your kids away from toxic environmental chemicals that are so pervasive in our homes and gardens. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and our guest is Leslie Solomonian. She is author of a stupendous work, Naturopathic Integrative Pediatrics, which is an 800-page textbook available to the general public. I know that, you know, we have a lot of health practitioners who listen in, and they really should have that book on their bookshelves. But
absolutely.
But we also have a lot of, I call them wonky intelligent medicine listeners, and they may, you know, if you're a parent or grandparent, it might be very worthwhile to order the book. It's available, right?
It is, yeah. You can get it on Amazon, although I'm not a big Amazon supporter, but it is available to the public.
Okay. And you have a website as well?
I do.
And it is?
It is leslysolomonian.weebly.com.
Okay. Like Solomon, King Solomon, with an I-A-N on the end.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll be right back with more of today's interview on Naturopathic and Integrative Pediatrics. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.